Welcome to the Biz News Edge. I'm Alec Hogg, and today is Tuesday, the 30th of June. Well, today the market has just delivered a verdict on Absa. Management clearly wasn't expecting it. And we've got a former DA leader accusing Tony Leon of pulling strings from the shadows. And in a moment, conversation that ties all of this together. Corné Mulder, leader of the Freedom Front Plus on a government of national unity that's looking more fragile by the week. Let's get into it. We start today with Absa because the share price did the talking and it wasn't kind. The bank released a voluntary trading update this morning, the kind of update that's usually a non-event. Few paragraphs of careful guidance ahead of half-year results. Management talked up mid-single-digit earnings growth, a return on equity holding to about 15%, and capital sitting comfortably above target. On paper, steady, unremarkable even. The market disagreed violently. Absa shares dropped 8% on the news. That's not a rounding error. That's investors reading straight through the spin and not liking what they found underneath. And when you dig past the headline numbers, it's not hard to see why. Net interest income growth is anemic. Margins are being squeezed as interest rates fall across the continent. The Absa Africa region's earnings are now expected to decline outright. The stronger rand quietly eating into reported numbers from elsewhere. And this was meant to be the half where Absa's Africa diversification proved its worth. Instead, the market's read is that the growth engine outside South Africa is stalling at exactly the wrong moment, while South Africa itself is doing all the heavy lifting and getting none of the credit. Well, my view is that when a bank's own guidance sounds calm, but the share price falls 8%, that's the market telling you something management isn't saying out loud. This wasn't reassurance. It was a confession dressed up as routine paperwork. And investors weren't fooled for a second. Full results land on the 18th of August. Expect some uncomfortable questions from the analysts and investors on that call. Well, from one credibility test to another, Tony Leon, former DA leader, now executive chairman of Resolve Communications, has gone on the offensive against the very party he used to run, or at the very least, one of his successors, the ex-leader, John Steenhuisen. It follows allegations from Steenhuisen, the DA's immediate former leader, who only left 2 months ago, who was recently, stripped of his agriculture portfolio after the foot and mouth disease catastrophe was mishandled on his watch. Steenhuisen said there was a deal that he would step down as leader as long as he could carry on as the Minister of Agriculture. Strange what happens in back rooms in politics. His defense, delivered in a News 24 interview, was to blame external enemies. He named Leon directly and suggested Resolve has been pulling the strings behind the scenes. Tony Leon's response was direct. He says, not one document, not one unlawful act has been produced to support the claims that Steenhuisen has made. That one accuser, in Leon's words, simply put two and two together and came up with his own conclusions. Tony Leon has drawn a hard line between lobbying and state capture, and he's not ruling out legal action if the allegations from Steenhuisen cross into defamation. My view on this, when a serious allegation comes wrapped in zero evidence, it's not a scandal, that's a smokescreen. But smokescreens still do damage. And this one is now actively destabilizing a coalition partner inside the government of national unity, which is exactly where today's main conversation picks up. And the reason for that is the Leon Steenhuisen fight, or is it Leon, rather Steenhuisen Jordan Lewis fight, Hill Lewis fight, isn't happening in a vacuum. It's playing out inside a government of national unity that, on evidence of today's lead conversation that you're going to hear in a moment, was never as stable as it looked. Some context first. South Africa's livestock crisis didn't sneak up on anyone. Let's get the background. Since at least November 2025, and perhaps even 5 months earlier, South Africa's livestock crisis was no secret. Agricultural leaders like Dr. Theo de Jager of SAI were publicly warning the government of what he called a national failure. We covered it on BizNews in a lengthy interview. And he called it the worst livestock catastrophe since 1897. Farmers like Pete Keane went on our BizNews program describing herds 100% infected, unable to sell or vaccinate. BizNews ran extensive coverage documenting state paralysis on the whole access to vaccines. And by June, farming advocates had sent direct correspondence to Agriculture Minister John Steenhuisen. This June last year, outlining the crisis, requesting action. Within weeks this year, he has been removed from his portfolio. This after a court case went very badly for him. Yet, in the most recent News 24 interview, where he threw so many people under the bus, Steenhuisen has attributed his demotion to external enemies, Tony Leon, Jordan Hill Lewis, and what he calls an AfriMAGA mob, rather than addressing the question of whether he acted on warnings that were public, persistent, and documented. I suppose from our perspective, we're a little surprised that Steenhuisen did not come and talk to BizNews about this story, given that we had been asking him on numerous occasions to do so. But someone who is very happy to talk to us on it is Corne Mulder. He's the leader of the Freedom Front Plus. We hear in the scuttlebutt that he's the happiest man alive because Steenhuisen is out, and certainly the way that Steenhuisen treated others in the DA, given that at times the DA and the Freedom Front do compete for votes directly against each other. Is that true, Corne?
It's true that the two parties do compete for votes, but it's not true that I'm the happiest man alive because that John Steenhuisen as to what happened to him. As a matter of fact, in a certain instance, I feel a bit sorry for John. I've watched the interview that he did with News 24, and it was quite interesting. I said to myself when I listened to the interview, one gets the impression that everything went well. Everything was just fine, and if that's the case, then one would ask the question, why did we have a problem? Why did we have a crisis? And was it necessary for Jordan Lewis to remove him from that position? It didn't make sense if you listen to what he basically said.
Yeah, but what he said was that he didn't do anything wrong, and it was because of AfriMAGA. And many of those who would, I suppose, naturally align with the Freedom Front Plus were named as bad actors generally. And what he said in the White House was the start of a campaign against him. How much of that are you giving credibility to, given that you say you feel sorry for the man?
No, I don't give any credibility to that. I think that a number of things happened, and I think one could go back in time a little bit to the beginning. And I think all of this basically started with the first executive order by President Trump. And that executive order was issued on the 7th of February last year. And you'll recall that in that executive order, President Trump indicated that there are some unhappiness with the South African government with regard to rural safety in terms of farm murders, in terms of the slogan, kill the Boer, in terms of regard to expropriation and all those things. And then the whole tariff thing came in. That was on the 7th of February last year. And then shortly after that, at the end of February last year, there was a delegation from the Solidarity Movement that went to Washington, and they went there to put a certain case across, which they did. And they were adamant right from then, right until today, that they went there with a positive message saying to President Trump that if you want to act against South Africa, please don't punish the people of South Africa, act against the government of the day if that is then necessary. So that was a positive message. And then things developed right from there on. If I can remember, around April of last year, there was an instance where Mr. Steenhuisen reacted to the Solidarity Movement and the whole feeling that was building up against Solidarity and AfriForum. And he accused them of spreading disinformation. And I can assure you that didn't go off very well, because I know exactly what the message of the Solidarity Movement was. It was a positive and a constructive message. And the fact that they were then accused by Mr. Steenhuisen of disinformation didn't go off very well. And then I recall it was in May of last year, we had a meeting in the office of the president in Pretoria at his residence, official residence, in which the party leaders or the parties in the Government of National Unity met. And at that meeting, Mr. Ramaphosa explained to us that he did call President Trump, and he indicated to him that Zelensky was going to visit South Africa. And he was trying to convince President Trump over the call that things are not that bad as President Trump seems to think. It was then that President Trump allegedly, according to President Ramaphosa, said, don't talk to me now. Come to the White House and bring your golfing friends along. And he gave feedback to us in that regard, President Ramaphosa. That led to the delegation that went to the White House and were then received in the Oval Office on the 21st of May of last year. A couple of days prior to that meeting, I did an interview on one of the television stations, and I said, I predict it's going to be a catastrophe, diplomatic problem, because you don't start on the level of heads of state. At that stage, the relations were so bad between South Africa and the United States already that you start on a much lower level between officials and see if you can sort out the problems. And once you get some kind of an agreement or some kind of trade deal, only then do you involve the heads of state. But in any case, I made the point. I said, even if I was asked to participate, I would have declined. We all know what happened in that meeting on the 21st of May of last year, that the famous one about dim lights. And it's correct. And John refers to that in his interview with News 24, where he says he was then called on by President Ramaphosa, and he was not prepared to indicate that there is a problem in terms of a genocide in South Africa. And he was then blamed for that afterwards until today. My view was basically that I think he was found guilty by association. The mere fact that he went along in that delegation did put him in a very difficult position, and he paid a political price for that. And I think there was a huge opportunity to put the facts on the table, to indicate at that meeting that it's not necessarily perhaps a genocide in terms of the official legal definition, but that there is a huge problem and that President Trump's concerns are correct and that there are policies that are absolutely detrimental to South Africa's economy and to growth. But he didn't basically do that, and I think it started to unravel from there. At the same time, shortly after that, as you correctly point out, the whole foot-of-mouth disease thing became a real issue. And it just evolved from there on up to the point where we are now. And it was fascinating for me to watch this interview on News 24. I'm not going to give my opinion in terms of the internal Democratic Alliance's problems, in terms of blaming this one or blaming that one, or saying there were certain promises made in terms of his position. It's not for me to express myself on that. I'm not going to do that. But I think some very interesting information also came out of the interview in terms of the positioning of the Democratic Alliance vis-a-vis Solidarity, vis-a-vis AfriForum, vis-a-vis the white population and conservative formations in South Africa. And I think one should take note of that going into the local government elections in 4 months.
Just tell us how you interpreted that message.
Well, Mr. Steenhuisen made it very clear in the interview where he said some people expect, and remember now, one must see the context. Until 2 months ago, John Steenhuisen was still the leader of the Democratic Alliance. He was the leader that led the party during the last elections, the local government election of 2021, the provincial and national one in 2024. And he quite clearly made the point in this interview by saying that people must remember that the Democratic Alliance is a liberal party, and that people who expect them to bend the knee or to reach out basically to what he calls the AfriMaga crew, which I think is a derogatory term as far as I'm concerned, shouldn't expect that. And he basically said one must understand that this grouping of people are nationalists, are traditionalists, some of them are racists, etc., and that it's not in the interest of the Democratic Alliance to try to complete these kind of people. And if the DA wants to grow and become the largest party, they cannot afford to do so because they need to get some support from other sectors of society. And he specifically mentioned the black community, the colored community, and the Indian community. I think he's making a vital mistake. It seems that he's thinking in terms of races instead of thinking in terms of values. But we clearly position the Democratic Alliance as a party, a liberal party, and I don't think the Democratic Alliance will complain if one sees the Democratic Alliance as a center-left political party. In contrast to that, the Freedom Front Plus sees ourselves as a center-right political party, a party more than we're in a completely different position. And I would like to speak about the difference in terms of values, because I think that's also very important in terms of when people take decisions where they should support and where they should vote.
Now, that story about values was brought up at the BizNews conference in March in Hermanus. And it was lovely that you were there, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again in the mountains when the three guys get together after political discussion. But that, I think, Rob, was it Rob Herzog who stood up and said, if I were to vote on my values, I would vote for Freedom Front Plus. So what was he getting at there? Did you manage to have a whisper in his ear?
No. When I became leader of the party in also by coincidence February, on the 22nd of February last year, I made it very clear that I think one must evaluate the South African population. And then evaluation indicates that approximately 80% of our population, and that's from all sectors of society, from all communities, are basically people that sees themselves as conservative, that sees themselves that they feel very strongly about traditional family values, and they say they are Christians. And all I said was, it's important, I think it's not rocket science, that the Freedom Front Plus should position ourselves next to what is important and what burns in the hearts and the minds of those South African citizens. And that's exactly why, in terms of this election, we say it's our time. And if I speak about our time, our includes all of this South Africans. And with that goes a certain set of values. And I think being a party that sees ourselves as center-right, in contrary to the Democratic Alliance, which I would say is center-left, that brings us to very important values, values like free market party, driven by free market, the whole free market idea, a Christian Democratic Party, values such as limited government, private and guaranteed property rights, federalism, decentralization, recognition of diversity as a positive and strong building block in South Africa, merit, equal opportunities, traditional family values, Judeo-Christian values, zero tolerance for crimes, patriotism, and I can go on. These are the kind that I believe are trusted values internationally and that has proven to be successful and make countries successful in terms of economic growth, job creation, etc. And I think that contrasts us to a very large extent to where the Democratic Alliance positions itself. And it was interesting in this interview that Mr. Steenhuisen did, and I say again, he was the leader of the party until 2 months ago. I have not heard any utterances from the new leadership that they are now moving or shifting their direction or their course towards a more center-right positioning and expressing their support for these kind of values. I've made the point, you can go and ask the citizens of Cape Town. When Jordan Lewis came with their budget, which had huge implications and people had to take that to court, he made the point to say, well, 60% of Cape Townians won't pay 1 cent more. I understand that. But the problem is the other 40% says we are sick and tired and irritated of subsidizing 60% of the inhabitants of Cape Town to our detriment and just having to pay out. And that kind of socialist kind of things are slowly creeping into the Democratic Alliance, as far as I'm concerned, being a central left political party. I think the important point that Mr. Steenhuisen made, and I must give him credit for the honesty, is to say the Democratic Alliance cannot afford to ponder towards the AfriForum solidarity kind of grouping. But he went further. He referred to Afrikaners in general, and by doing that, basically, he's referring to the, as far as I'm concerned, to a very large segment of our population that are basically supporting Judeo-Christian principles, that see themselves as conservative, etc., and would like to see South Africa grow in terms of those proven kind of values. And then he made the point that the DA should exactly position themselves somewhere else. And he referred to the liberal tradition of the Democratic Alliance, where they came from. And it's common cause. The Democratic Alliance, I think, believes in individual rights, and they believe that that is sufficient in terms of protection for whatever challenges there may be in South Africa. But it's a little bit of a tragedy to look at where things started off a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, until where it completely unraveled at this point, where there seems to be a squabble within a Democratic Alliance. And as I've said, I'm not going to go there and make any contribution in that regard. It's not my problem. It's not my fault. But I'm going ahead in terms of positioning the Freedom Front Plus in terms of what I believe would be the correct positioning. And as you point out, I did have a discussion with Mr. Rob Herzog. And as you know, he's a central figure also at BizNews quite often. And Rob has made this position. He published it last week, I think, in the last couple of days. He did the evaluation of political parties in South Africa, and he said, well, I'm going to weigh them against certain principles and certain values. And then the conclusion is the maximum you can score in that evaluation is 50 points. And I think he ends up by saying the Freedom Front Plus ends up on top with 46, and then it goes further down from there. And if that being the case, it takes me to the next point where I would like to say, Yes, we are going into a local government election, and that's going to be the end of the year. And as I've predicted in the past, and I'm honestly convinced that that's going to be the case, we are going to see coalition governments throughout South Africa, most likely in most, or if not all, of the metros, and in a vast number of local municipalities. In the last election, it was mainly in the Western Cape and some in Gauteng. But I think this time around, we're going to see coalition throughout South Africa. Now, it is a correct position that when it comes to local government issues of governance, obviously the Freedom Front Plus and the Democratic Alliance do have certain things in common in terms of no tolerance of any corruption, in terms of service delivery as a priority, in terms of good governance practices, et cetera, et cetera. So that obviously will make it possible for a party like the Democratic Alliance and the Freedom Front Plus to cooperate in coalition governments. And I think that is absolutely essential. But the benefit of this is, if the parties position themselves quite clearly in terms of their set of values and their principles, and that becomes more clearer every day, then I say the electorate may have the best of both worlds. You can vote in terms of your values, in terms of your principles, where you feel more comfortable, but well knowing that your vote will be taken with those values into a coalition government afterwards, which will be to the benefit of the inhabitants or the people, the residents in each and every municipality. And that is where we are moving towards at the moment. And I think that is constructive and positive. Because I'm also very much aware of the fact that the electorate is very negative about any perception of conflict between specifically the Democratic Alliance and the Freedom Front Plus. I understand that. And I don't want to be seen to be in a conflict or some fist fight, whatever political fist fight with the Democratic Alliance. It's not necessary. All that we need to do is let's put our positions out there and the electorate will decide for themselves. And then obviously, if you take into consideration the whole idea at the moment, as we go into the election, it seems that we have about 530 registered political parties in South Africa. How many of those are going to participate, we don't know. But if that is the case, then I say, if you take the largest 10 political parties in South Africa, out of 530 parties in the country, then those 10 larger parties are all relevant political players that need to be taken serious. And if you look at that top 10, I would say, let's have a look at the evaluation that Rob Herzog basically did in terms of certain values. And then you'll find amongst those top 10 parties, you'll find what I would like to call the good people, and you'll find, let's say, the bad people. And that is the choice that is in front of the electorate as we go to the election at the end of the year. And then you should be able to know that the good people should come together and form reliable, stable coalitions. And I want to say the Freedom Front Plus has proven ourselves as a reliable coalition partner throughout, and we will continue to play that role. And obviously the DA should play the same kind of role. I hope they can, they will. But then the DA should do perhaps where they are better positioned to reach out towards more where the ANC votes lie. And I think they've got a better chance in getting some of those votes like they did recently in Mfuleni. And I think that is what Mr. Steenhuisen is basically saying. Don't react negatively to the other side of the coin. Let people vote where they feel comfortable in terms of their values, and then we can form stable coalitions afterwards in the best interest of our municipalities.
So it seems from the interview he's basically taken the template of the ANC of the DA rather, and how it wants to govern the country, and he's shared that with everyone. Clearly, given other political parties insights they might not have had, but more than that, given the voters a better insight to what the DA is all about. If I listen to what you've been saying, but the first thing that occurred to me was you had in the Freedom Front Plus a change in leadership recently. And your predecessor was a cabinet minister. He continues as a cabinet minister. You are now the new leader. There's been no bad blood between the two of you, or certainly doesn't appear to be. And I guess for many people watching this, that would be one of the first contrasts that come through. How have you managed to do that within your party, or at the very least, maybe kept whatever antagonism you might have had out of the public eye?
I think it's a question of responsible leadership, and I think it's in terms of people realizing the importance of the time that we are in at the moment. And I don't want to overemphasize this. I really think we are at the crossroads in South Africa. We may think that what is coming now are only local government elections, but this is just the foundation that is being laid for the real elections that comes in 2029, when I honestly believe that we can turn South Africa around finally for the better in terms of being able to form a coalition government and even remove the ANC from political power altogether. That is where we are working towards in 2029. But in order to be successful, we have to start off now. And I think it's a question of responsible leadership and to understand the challenges involved. And the decision that we basically took was that Dr. Groenewald is playing his role in the executive. And the irony to a very large extent was, and that's just my observation, I think part of the Democratic Alliance's strategy was to show to the electorate how well do we govern, and to set an example to say, just look how effective our ministers are, and because of that, we have got a proven track record. Now, I'm not going to express myself in terms of if that is a successful track record, if you look at the foot and mouth thing and other stuff, but the content on the opposite of this argument, there's no doubt that what is happening in correctional services is a huge success. And that Dr. Groenewald has been successful in correctional services to make a huge difference and to bring stability and to bring order and discipline into that department, and is continuing so on a daily basis. But that being the case, it's very important that I, as the leader of the party, is not part of the executive. I do not owe allegiance to the president. When I visit Washington, and I was in London last week at the ARC conference, I don't need to ask permission from the president or anybody else. I do get permission from my own political party. I can play my role outside of the executive, and I'm leading the party, and I'm acting in the best interest of the political party itself. And I think that is the correct recipe. In other words, I'm not constrained in any matter to criticize when necessary, and I've done so. I've taken the government, the ANC on, the president on with regard to black economic empowerment, with regard to South Africa's international relations, in terms of our policy and positioning, in terms of the court case against Israel and many other instances. And some of the criticism against the Democratic Alliance was that you became silent and it seems that you've been co-opted in the government of national unity. I don't have that problem. And I think the DA perhaps learned a lesson from us, the Freedom Front Plus, with Mr. Jordan Lewis now staying out of the executive and maybe try to do exactly what I'm doing on my side. And I think that's the best recipe. It's a winning recipe to go forward. And I think we will continue doing so.
Just to close off with, Corné, the Government of National Unity, of which you are a part, has to be looking at this as a collective and saying there's a lot of fragility now that appears to be within the Democratic Alliance, not least the allegation from its leader, former leader, that Tony Leon is actually pulling the strings from behind the scenes. Now, that brings up all kinds of governance issues, quite apart from the allegations that, that his company has been benefiting from this. Does this give you pause when you have a look as a member of the Government of National Unity at what's happening at one of your partners?
Yes, I've always been a very strong supporter of the concept of a government of national unity, or then a normal kind of coalition government, because for various reasons. First of all, our electoral system asks for coalition kind of governments. And for the first time in more than 30 years, we got to the point where we are now going into coalition governments. I think that is constructive. But the challenge is we should structure those things in the right way. In other words, no party got sufficient support to govern on yourself, by yourself. So that means you need to come together, negotiate a new platform that everybody agrees to. And regardless of your own platform, this then becomes a platform and for the next 5 years of this government. This did not really happen in the current Government of National Unity. It's almost like political parties acting all by themselves and doing their own thing. So these allegations that John Steenhuisen has now put on the table with regard to Resolve, those things are serious. And the implications, I don't know where it will go. Obviously, it won't just go away. There will be some questions asked. I see some parties have asked for investigation to make sure what's happening. But these things are negative, and they are unraveling the Government of National Unity, and it's not in the interest of South Africans that that kind of thing happens at the moment, because we must be realistic. There are some real bad guys waiting out on the periphery, trying to get and to destabilize in totality. And they don't mind if the economy collapses. That's all part of the strategy, believing that something will rise out of the ashes and they will create this wonderful revolution. It's negative. It shouldn't be the case. But I think we should all learn lessons from that. And luckily, from Plus's point of view, we're not involved in any of this. And we will continue in that vein to try and do the best that we can. And I think we're setting an example.
Thank you for your context. Corné Mulder is the leader of the Freedom Front Plus.
Thank you very much, Alec. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was Corné Mulder, leader of the Freedom Front Plus. Well, a few things from that conversation stayed with me. First, Mulder, who has every political incentive to enjoy Steenhuisen's downfall, instead says he feels sorry for him. That's not generosity. That's a seasoned political operator reading the situation correctly. Steenhuisen was found guilty by association the moment he walked into that Oval Office delegation, the one that met with Donald Trump in the famous Dim the Lights episode. And the real failure, his real failure, was a missed opportunity to put South Africa's actual problems on the table instead of dodging the genocide question entirely. Second, Mulder traces this entire unraveling back 14 months to a single executive order out of Washington. From there, a Solidarity Movement delegation accused of disinformation, a tense meeting in the union buildings, a call with Trump that ended with, "Bring your golfing friends," and then the infamous Oval Office ambush. One diplomatic misstep compounding into a domestic political crisis that's now eating the DA from within and dragging Tony Leon's name into the wreckage along the way. Well, my view is that the most telling moment in this whole saga is Mulder's description of the government of national unity itself. Parties operating side by side rather than genuinely co-governing, with no shared platform actually negotiated. And the co-governing is what South African voters want. So why aren't the politicians listening? Why are they putting egos in front of what the nation needs? That structural weakness of unnegotiated platforms is precisely why one minister's scandal can spiral into allegations against a private communications firm and destabilize an entire coalition to the country's detriment. And Mulder's blunt warning is the one to remember. There are bad actors on the periphery who don't mind if South Africa's economy buckles because chaos is their strategy. That should worry every investor watching this from the sidelines, and it should worry them today of all days, with Absa's share price already telling its own story about confidence cracking at the edges. So let's pull today together for the BizNews Edge. The market took a blowtorch to Absa's trading update, punishing a bank that tried to sound calm about a tougher continent and an offshore engine that's stalling. Tony Leon has drawn his own line in the sand against allegations he says are built on nothing, and he's not ruling out the courts to settle it between him and Steenhuisen. And Corné Mulder, Freedom Front Plus leader, the longest-serving politician in Parliament in South Africa, has given us the clearest outside read yet on a democratic alliance that looks increasingly fragile, with implications that run well beyond party politics, right into how stable this government of national unity actually is heading into the local government elections in November this year. Three stories, one thread. South Africa's institutions, financial and political, are being tested today, not in some abstract future. Absa's share price already cast its vote. Don't be the last one to read the room. That's the BizNews Edge for today. I'm Alec Hogg. Thank you for your time. Head over to biznews.com for the full conversation with Corné Mulder and everything else moving your portfolio today. And don't forget, last day to get your early bird special price on BNC9, our conference in the Drakensberg. Until tomorrow, cheerio.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes.
Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
In uncertain times, good information is priceless. The BizNews Conference is heading back to the Drakensberg. Join me, Alec Hogg, from the 11th to the 14th of August for BNC9, Champagne Sports Resort, where it all began and where our community gathers for honest conversations, smart investing insights, and direct access to some of South Africa's sharpest minds. Come and rub shoulders with the best we've got. 28 keynote speakers, 3 days. Seats are available now. Book your seat by clicking the link in the description. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.